Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, May 12, 2023. First day without the Title 42 pandemic immigration restrictions, as tens of thousands of migrants are poised on the U.S.-Mexico border. Coming up, White House reacts to a federal judge putting on hold the plan to release some migrants seeking asylum who don't have a court date. And also to a report that a migrant minor in federal custody has died. Plus thoughts on the immigration situation now from a Republican and Democrat in Congress. Debt limit talks to end the standoff between House Republicans and the White House not happening today. Both sides agreeing to let staff continue to talk until next week. Former Manhattan District Attorney Mark Pomeranz is deposed by the U.S. House Judiciary Committee on the decision by the current DA to charge former President Donald Trump. But reports are Mark Pomeranz is taking the fifth on every question. House Foreign Affairs Committee Chair Michael McCaul says he will go ahead with charging Secretary of State Antony Blinken with contempt of Congress for not turning over a document with U.S. diplomats criticizing the decision to withdraw U.S. forces from Afghanistan in 2021. It's known as a dissent cable. And President Joe Biden meeting with the Prime Minister of Spain in the White House Oval Office, discussing migration, climate change, and the war in Ukraine. And now to immigration and border security. ABC News writing, the Biden administration on Friday faced new legal hurdles to its plans to manage a migration crisis as Title 42 pandemic-era border restrictions came to an end Thursday night. A federal judge in Florida late Thursday temporarily blocked U.S. Customs and Border Protection from releasing migrants without a formal notice to appear in court. The parole authority CBP uses to release migrants quickly comes with requirements to report back to authorities, even if no court date has been set. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas sharply criticized the ruling by the judge in an interview Friday morning with ABC's Good Morning America, saying this is a harmful ruling and the Department of Justice is considering our options. More on this from today's White House briefing with the press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre.
On the ruling in Florida last night against these releases and the Biden administration's statement in that legal filing that 45,000 individuals are going to be in custody by the end of this month if we're not able to go forward with this process of releases, what's the backup plan now?
So let me just say on the ruling that you just laid out to me. So look, the way we see that, it's sabotage. It's pure and simple. That's how that reads to us. The claims that CBP is allowing or encouraging mass release of migrants and is just categorically false. That is not what's occurring. That is not what's happening. And it is a harmful ruling. And the Department of Justice is going to fight it. That's what we're going to see. And we're going to continue to use every tool that we have to make sure that we are dealing with this issue in a humane and orderly way. And so just last night, ICE announced that it is adding thousands more beds. But look, Republican elected officials continue to play games here. They continue to have political stunts, and they don't want to solve this problem. They want to use it, again, as a campaign tool for them. And so what we want to make sure is deal with this challenging circumstances. That's what we have done since day one of this administration.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre with reporters in the White House briefing room. They also asked her about news that a teenage migrant from Honduras who was an unaccompanied minor when he arrived in the U.S. has died at a Florida migrant shelter run by the Office of Refugee Resettlement in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
HHS about an hour or so ago confirmed that a migrant, a 7-year-old boy, died in HHS custody a couple of days ago. He's been in custody for a number of weeks, we've been told. Has the president been briefed on that incident, and is there concerns that the system isn't prepared to handle all the people who are being interdicted right now at the border and maintaining custody as a result of the ruling tonight? Has he ordered any sort of investigation?
So thank you for the question. It is sad news. It's deeply saddening to hear, and we are certainly aware of the tragic loss, and our hearts go out to the family. And it is, as I just mentioned, being a mother and celebrating Mother's Day on Sunday, it is very devastating news. There is a medical investigation that was opened on May 10th, and so I don't want to get ahead of that. We got to let the investigation go through, and so any specific questions, certainly I would have to refer you to HHS. I haven't actually spoken to the president about this, so I don't have any information if he's been briefed on this. But I can say that there is a medical investigation that was opened on May 10th, and we're just going to let that go.
The White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, the Health and Human Services Department, Office of Refugee Resettlement putting out a statement. The agency expressed its condolences to the family of the deceased child and is in communication with them during this tragic time. Story from CNN, there was no substantial increase overnight or an influx at midnight of migrants across the southern border following the lifting of Title 42, a top Department of Homeland Security official said Friday. Blas Nunez Nieto, Assistant Secretary for Border and Immigration Policy, telling reporters overnight, we saw similar patterns to what we've seen over the past several days. We continue to encounter high levels of non-citizens at the border, but we did not see a substantial increase overnight or an influx at midnight. He reiterated that the U.S. government has tens of thousands of Border Patrol agents and officers and has surged thousands of law enforcement personnel and contractors to the border. That from CNN. Congresswoman Debbie Lesko, Republican from Arizona, was interviewed today on Fox Business Channel about the end of Title 42.
I've been to the border multiple times, talked to the Border Patrol officers and the local elected officials along the Arizona border multiple times. It was a crisis before. And now that Title 42 has expired, it's just going to be worse. I mean, this is a national security crisis, but it's also a humanitarian crisis because the Border Patrol officers have told me these young girls are being sold into sex slavery. They're not vetting the adults that they're sending these unaccompanied children to. This is just awful. And the Biden administration and, quite frankly, the Democrats in Congress are complicit in this.
What should the administration do now, if anything? What can they do to fix this? Or is it just too late?
No, they should sign our border secure bill that the Republicans passed out of the U.S. House yesterday. I mean, that would fix the problems. It instituted a lot of things that the Trump administration did, like remain in Mexico policy, stop and catch and release, install E-Verify for workers and employers. And it started building the fence again. I mean, just common sense things that worked under the Trump administration. We passed that yesterday out of the U.S. House of Representatives. And so, you know, if the Senate passed it and the president signed it, it would solve the problem. Republicans have a solution.
Congresswoman Debbie Lesko, Republican from Arizona, interviewed on Fox Business Channel this morning. The House and the Senate are not in session this Friday. Congressman Jamal Bowman, Democrat from New York, tweeting this video today, the day after the Title 42 policy expired.
Yes, we do have a crisis at the border, but the crisis is not the immigrants who are coming here seeking asylum away from horrific circumstances. The crisis is the fact that we do not have comprehensive immigration reform in our country, and we haven't had it for decades, forever, really. And we don't have a pathway to citizenship for those who must come here running away from pretty much terror in their communities. I also want to say that immigrants are the lifeblood and the engine of the American economy and our social structure. We are strong as a nation because we are a nation of immigrants. We have been that from the very beginning, and we must continue to be that. Please do not lean into the Republican fear-mongering about the crisis of brown people coming to America, because for them, that's what it's all about. This is the great replacement, white supremacist, patriarchal, nationalist, imperial, colonial theory. This is what they are about. This is the crisis that they are spewing. News media, please don't follow them. Congress hasn't done its job for comprehensive immigration reform. Congress hasn't done its job for a pathway to citizenship and to make it easier for immigrants to come here. And that's the issue, and it hasn't happened in ever. So that's why we are where we are now.
Congressman Jamal Bowman, Democrat from New York, tweeting that video. Mexican Foreign Minister Marcelo Ebrard reports NBC News said Friday that the U.S. has granted 100,000 visas to migrants from Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua, and Haiti through the CBP-1 application. He said the U.S. is doing its part through the online app and announced that another 100,000 appointments have been opened for Central American citizens through the app. The CBP-1 app was released by Customs and Border Protection in 2020. In May, the government launched a new version of the application so that migrants can register to request asylum in the United States after the end of Title 42. However, writes NBC News, there have been complaints that the mobile app is not easily accessed and doesn't always work when people try to use it. This is Washington Today. Debt limit talks between President Joe Biden and congressional leaders of both parties did not take place today as originally scheduled, but both Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and the White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre saying it was a mutual decision to delay the meeting until next week, as staff-level talks have been, as the press secretary says, productive. In public comments, President Biden still holding to his requirement that a national debt limit increase be a standalone bill, avoiding a default as early as June, Speaker McCarthy insisting on accompanying spending cuts. The White House Infrastructure Implementation Coordinator Mitch Landrieu was at today's White House briefing and asked by a reporter about the consequences of a possible default on projects that he oversees.
Can you give us a sense of how the debt ceiling debate and potential negative outcome will impact the infrastructure spending and the law? And can you also give us a sense of how red states are taking the money, if anyone voting against it is saying no thanks?
Let me do this backwards. They're taking it fast, the red states. And nobody has returned a dollar. Everybody has been a ready and willing partner. And of course, as I said, these projects are in all 50 states. They are touching 4,500 communities. They're in the territories, and they're in D.C. On the debt limit, I'll make just a couple of comments. I know that y'all have spoken a lot about this, but as the president said, America is not a deadbeat nation. Avoiding default is a basic duty of Congress. And in fact, this is a manufactured crisis. And as the president said, and as I've said to many of you today, their president's Investing in America agenda is working. They've got to keep the progress going. 12.7 million jobs, 800,000 manufacturing jobs, which is the proof of the manufacturing boom that we have, 3.4% unemployment, a Made in America manufacturing boom. And of course, as Moody said, and you all have all heard this and reported this, a default is going to cost us 800,000 jobs, push us further into recession, raise the cost of everything, including borrowing. And that really kind of threatens to do all of this major progress going forward. And my sense is that we have never been here before, at least at this particular point. Nobody wants to see it happen. The consequences are unpredictable, but it can't have anything but negative consequences on the work that we're trying to do.
White House Infrastructure Implementation Coordinator Mitch Landrieu in the White House briefing room with reporters. Republican Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio is supporting House Speaker Kevin McCarthy's position. Congressman Jordan took questions at a Republican lawyers' conference.
Quick question on the debt ceiling situation and kind of the postponement of the meeting. You know, what's your take on where we are?
I mean, my take is the position of the White House and the Democrats is ridiculous. Record spending, record inflation, record debt, but I'm not going to talk to you, even though we have split government. Just give me more money, or I'll take my football and go home. Like, what? You can't. We have divided government. Speaker McCarthy has been right about this all along. He's like, we're going to pass a bill, start negotiating with you early. He wouldn't. Okay, we are going to pass the bill. We passed the bill, start negotiating with you now. Their position is just completely wrong. And anyone with common sense, I bet a bunch of Democrats, other than the ones in Congress, understand it's completely wrong. So, God bless the Speaker. He put together, like I said, good legislation. We'll see what happens. I understand that one of the leaders, I don't know which one, this is what the Speaker said yesterday, wasn't able to make the meeting that was supposed to happen today, so I think they're meeting next Monday or Tuesday, sometime next week.
Congressman Jim Jordan, Republican from Ohio. He's also Judiciary Committee Chair today at the Republican National Lawyers Association Conference in Arlington, Virginia. A story from Reuters, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said there was still uncertainty about exactly when Treasury would run out of cash to pay U.S. government debts. but she would keep Congress apprised of any change in the date, which could come as early as June 1st. Speaking on the sidelines of the Group of Seven, or G7, finance officials meeting in Japan, Secretary Yellen told Bloomberg News that the Biden administration was working around the clock to avert the economic upheaval that would be triggered if Congress failed to raise the $31.4 trillion dollar debt limit. That from Reuters. Secretary Yellen also held a formal news conference, and a reporter asked her about how the U.S. might try to prevent the next debt limit crisis.
Elaine Kurtenbach, AP.
I'm sorry, I'm sticking to the same topic, but I'm wondering if you see any, in the long term, way to end this cycle of almost 80 rounds of brinksmanship that are leaving us in this position, sometimes more than once a year. Is there a way in the long term to find a better way to deal with this problem?
So I've my personal opinion on this, I'm not speaking for President Biden, but I've weighed in on this topic previously. And personally, I think we should find a different system for deciding on fiscal policy. Congress could repeal a debt ceiling or handle it differently. For a time, it was handled, and these are some proposals, that the president could unilaterally decide to raise the debt ceiling and inform Congress of it. Congress would have an opportunity, if they wished to, vote to override his decision. The president could veto that. It would take a supermajority of Congress to override the veto. That would be one kind of change. But look, you know, when Congress votes on appropriations and they vote on taxes, and those decisions imply a path of deficits and a set of bills that are entailed by those choices. And to then impose a debt ceiling means it puts my Treasury in the position of having bills come due to pay for programs that have already been legislated and essentially services we've already contracted for, and then says you can't pay for all of it. We're limiting you, so you can't pay all the government's bills. And I don't think that's any way to run the government. So there are a variety of alternatives, and my own preference would be not to go through this every couple of years is tremendously damaging.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen at the G7 Finance Ministers meeting in Japan, holding a news conference on Thursday. President Biden is scheduled to travel to Japan for the G7 Leaders Summit in Hiroshima next week, but he has suggested he may attend virtually if the debt limit stalemate is not resolved. On Wall Street, the Dow down 8, NASDAQ down 43, S&P down 6. Washington Post reports that President Biden on Friday announced two key nominations to the Federal Reserve Board, naming the first Latina governor and second black vice chair at the central bank. The White House would elevate Philip Jefferson, who became a Fed governor last year, to the number two role. The president also nominated Adriana D. Kugler, now the U.S. executive director of the World Bank, to a seat as governor. Those moves would fill the Fed's remaining vacancy after former vice chair Lael Brainard moved to the White House, and the decisions would further Democrats' attempts to make the 109-year-old central bank more reflective of the country it serves. That from Washington Post. And this is Washington Today. A New York Times article, Mark F. Pomeranz, the former prosecutor who once helped lead an investigation of Donald J. Trump, appeared on Friday before the Republican-led House Judiciary Committee for a deposition, but declined to answer many of its questions about the prosecution of the former president on charges of falsifying business records. Congressman Daryl Issa, a Republican from California, is a member of the committee. He spoke to reporters outside the meeting room.
You know, the rules of deposition do not allow the specifics of questions and answers. So I think it's appropriate to say he has answered no questions. He has asserted on behalf of the DA's office and himself, what I would characterize as taking the fifth, effectively taking the fifth every single time. So, you know, the substance of any answers that beyond that would be de minimis. I've never had a more obstructive and less cooperative witness in my over 20 years in Congress.
You said he's being uncooperative. You say he is actually taking the fifth, or effectively taking the fifth. Can you clarify that?
The witness has not cooperated in any way, shape, or form, has simply appeared, and it, I would characterize as taking the fifth on every single question.
So he hasn't answered any questions?
He has answered no substantive questions whatsoever, and clearly appears unwilling to answer any questions, even about previous statements he's made.
Congressman Darrell Issa, Republican from California, on Capitol Hill outside the closed House Judiciary Committee deposition of Mark Pomerantz, the former prosecutor who had helped lead an investigation of former President Donald Trump. New York Times article has quotes from Mr. Pomerantz's opening statement. It includes, "What I do not respect is the use of the committee's subpoena power to compel me to participate in an act of political theater. We are gathered here because Donald Trump supporters would like to use these proceedings to attempt to obstruct and undermine the criminal case pending against him and to harass, intimidate, and discredit anyone who investigates or charges him." That quote of the opening statement of Mark Pomerantz before the House Judiciary Committee as published in the New York Times. From the Associated Press, a U.S. Marine veteran who placed an agitated New York City subway passenger in a chokehold, killing him and sparking outrage as video of the encounter went viral, surrendered Friday on a manslaughter charge brought nearly 2 weeks later. Daniel Penny, 24, was freed pending trial hours after turning himself in at a police station and appearing in court to answer criminal charges in the May 1st death of Jordan Neely, a former subway performer with a history of mental illness. Daniel Penny did not enter a plea. That from Associated Press. His lawyer spoke outside the courtroom.
Good morning. My name is Thomas Kniff. I'm with the law firm of Reisner Kniff. We represent Daniel Penny in this matter. Shortly after 8 a.m. this morning, Daniel Penny surrendered at the 5th Precinct at the request of the New York County District Attorney's Office.
Sit down.
He did so voluntarily and with the sort of dignity and integrity that is characteristic of his history of service to this grateful nation. The case will now go to court. We expect an arraignment will occur this afternoon, and the process will unfold from there.
The lawyer for Daniel Penny today in New York City. More from the Associated Press article, Jordan Neely's death prompted protests while others embraced Daniel Penny as a vigilante hero. His lawyers have said he was acting in self-defense. Lawyers for Neely's family said Jordan Neely wasn't harming anyone and didn't deserve to die. An autopsy ruled Jordan Neely's death a homicide due to compression of the neck. Again, that from Associated Press. Dante Mills is an attorney for the Neely family. He also made a statement today, and he's saying that Daniel Penny should be charged with murder, not manslaughter.
So for everybody saying, I've been on the train and I've been afraid before, and I can't tell you what I would have done in that situation, I'm going to tell you. Ask how you can help. Please. Don't attack. Don't choke. Don't kill. Don't take someone's life. Don't take someone's loved one from them because they're in a bad place. No one on that train said, you started out by saying, I'm hungry. I need food. I'm done with it. I don't know where to get food. I don't care if I die. I don't care if I go to jail. I'm just done. No one said, here you are, sir. Let me meet your need or help you in a situation or give a word of encouragement. That's not what happened on that train. So should Daniel Penny be charged with manslaughter? Absolutely. Because he acted with indifference. He didn't care about Jordan. He cared about himself. And we can't let that stand. That's not who we are. That's not who we want to be.
Dante Mills, an attorney for the family of Jordan Neely, today after Daniel Penny surrendered to face charges. U.S. Congressman Andy Biggs, Republican from Arizona, tweeting an article on the Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's decision to charge Daniel Penny in Jordan Neely's death. Congressman Biggs adding this, This is exactly why I introduced the Alvin Act, which defunds District Attorney Alvin Bragg's Manhattan office. Alvin Bragg does not have his priorities straight. Washington Today continues in a moment.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast on the C-SPAN Now mobile app and wherever you get your podcasts. A story from the Washington Examiner. A top House Republican is moving closer to holding Secretary of State Antony Blinken in contempt after he again refused to comply with a subpoena demanding the State Department hand over a July 2021 dissent cable from the United States Embassy in Kabul, Afghanistan. Congressman Michael McCaul, Republican from Texas, chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee, has argued since late 2021 the Biden administration has been stonewalling his investigation into the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan. And that was from the Washington Examiner. Yesterday, Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern, was the third deadline that Congressman McCaul had given Secretary Blinken to turn over the dissent cable. The congressman spoke with the British newspaper Daily Mail when it became apparent the secretary would likely not comply.
Well, yeah, I'm hopeful he'll comply. We've given him ample time, three extensions of time. We tried to work this out, but unfortunately, it doesn't appear that that's going to work. And the next step will be to move to contempt proceedings. We plan to have a markup in my committee on May 24th to hold the secretary in contempt, but move that order to the floor for a full vote by the House of Representatives. I think it's interesting to note that this would be the first time the Secretary of State has ever been held in contempt by Congress.
And why is this so important to do, to fully commit to the contempt of Congress charges and push that forward?
Well, there's no executive privilege. The dissenting cable, I think the American people and the veterans and the Gold Star families have a right to know what the thinking was in the embassy at the time to take the extraordinary measure to dissent from the policy of the administration. 23 of the employees in the embassy were objecting to the policy of the administration. And I think that's why they don't want to turn it over to Congress. They don't want the American people to know why. And we also want to see the Secretary Blinken's response to the dissenting cable to see what the state of mind was a month before the debacle and the collapse of Afghanistan, which culminated in the killing of 13 servicemen and women at Abbey Gate and 170 Afghanistans.
And the State Department has said that their briefing to you a month or so back was sufficient and they didn't need to provide the full cable in its entirety. They provided a summary document, I believe. Why is that not sufficient in your eyes?
Well, first, we offered to say, hey, you can redact the names of the dissenters. We just want to know the contents and communications in the cable. To give us a filtered, summarized version, according to the State Department, to me is not satisfactory because it leaves out what the true contents are. I don't want a filtered, summarized version from state. I want to see the actual voices of the dissenters in the embassy at the time this was happening. So I think the request is very valid. Again, I've exercised great patience with this. It's not something I particularly relish in doing, and it's not a political thing at all. I'm doing this because I talked to the Gold Star families and I talked to these veterans, and they're demanding answers, and I've become their advocate, and I'm doing this for them.
An interview with Republican Congressman Michael McCaul, Foreign Affairs Committee Chair, posted by the Daily Mail newspaper on Thursday. The dissent channel is a formal process by which senior State Department officials can voice their honest opinions and criticisms of department policy without fear of retribution. State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel was questioned about this deadline at his news conference on Thursday, a few hours before that Afghanistan withdrawal dissent cable was due, according to Congressman McCall.
The deadline to turn over the Afghanistan dissent cable is 6 p.m. today. Yesterday, Chairman McCall said he had no alternative but to proceed with contempt proceedings if he doesn't get it. I know you commented on this earlier this week, but today's the deadline, so will the State Department comply with today's deadline?
Well, Nick, we will continue to engage with the House Foreign Affairs Committee and discuss with them on their requests. As I have said before, the department has already offered a classified briefing and a summary of the dissent channel cable, as well as the department's response. We believe that this information has been sufficient to meet what the committee has requested thus far, but we again will continue to engage with them, and I just don't have any updates to offer right now.
State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel in his news conference on Thursday. Again, Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern, was the deadline for Secretary of State Antony Blinken to give the House Foreign Affairs Committee the Afghanistan withdrawal dissent cable. And the secretary did not, and the committee leadership plans to pursue contempt of Congress charges against Secretary Blinken later this month. President Biden meeting with the Prime Minister of Spain, Pedro Sanchez, today in the White House Oval Office. Some of the topics they discussed: migration, climate change, and Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Well, Mr. President, welcome.
Well,
glad you're hospitality you provided for me in Madrid. And I don't regret his wish for staying for a week. During that visit, I said that you said that our two nations are linked by a shared desire. I think the quote was, to promote the principles of freedom. I couldn't agree with you more. Because today it's at stake in many parts of the world. Together, we're supporting Ukraine. I can't thank you enough for your significant support for Ukraine. It matters a great deal. And for your leadership, the partnership, and the challenge. Also, we signed a defense cooperation agreement, and I appreciate that as well. We're going to thank you for letting us station two destroyers in Spain. And together, you're helping us face the challenge. We're both facing the challenges of migration in the Western Hemisphere. We're doing a heck of a job. And Mr. President, you're about to take on the European Council's presidency this summer, and I'm anxious to talk to you about that as well. We have a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. Thank you, President Biden, I think it's a great pleasure, because I see you as a reference in the defense of democracy, as many citizens around the world would have never imagined that democracy would be under threat precisely here in Washington, in the U.S., but your commitment with the democratic values is an example to everyone. And in this context, I do believe that Spain and the United States, we share common values, and our bilateral relations are excellent. We are allies, friends, and also strategic partners. And I would like to touch upon four topics that we will discuss today. The first one is on Russia's aggressions in Ukraine. I do believe that the transatlantic bond and the unity among allies remain rock solid, President. We support Ukraine. Of course, we work for a lasting and just peace. That respects fully the international law and also the principles of the UN Charter. Make no mistake, in this war there is an aggressor and a victim, and the aggressor is President Putin. So this will be the first topic. The second topic is how our governments, the US administration and also the Spanish government, we put in the center of our political priorities and the benefit to our middle and working classes the green transition and the digital transformation. I would propose, President Biden, that we can work together to have the best success of COP28 later this year, and also that we could work together with the European Union in order to regulate the artificial intelligence to reach the highest level of standards at the global level. The third point would be, as President Biden said, presidency of the Council of the European Union. We are very ambitious, President. We have many goals. But I would like to highlight two, which I think would be very important in this second semester of the year. The first one is, how do we reindustrialize the European Union together with the US economy? And also, how do we, as Europeans, strengthen our bilateral cooperation with Latin America, which is a part of the world, a region where Spain and the US, we have common interests about democracy, prosperity, and a safe, regular, and orderly migration pathways. And last but not least, of course, we will talk about our bilateral relations, which I think are excellent, on the defense, as President Biden said, but also on science, trade, investments. We also are going to sign agreements to work together at the multilateral level in order to boost gender equality, LGBT rights, and also climate change, to name a few. So, President Biden, I do believe that the world needs a U.S. president that is committed to fighting the good fight, like you do, and you can count on Spain in that endeavor. So let's keep on doing this job.
I do count. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So the reaction to a lie of the
In the White House Oval Office, President Joe Biden and the Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez not taking any of the reporter's questions. By the way, President Biden referred to him as President Sanchez. In Spain, the official title of the Prime Minister is the President of the Government. Part of President Biden's recent immigration initiatives is to set up migrant processing centers in Latin America where asylum seekers can apply to go to not only the United States, but Spain and Canada as well. Finally, Senator Pete Ricketts, Republican from Nebraska, tweeting, "Mother's Day is this weekend. We had to know the Nebraska breakfast's favorite thing or memory about their mom." This video was attached, begins with the senator.
All right, so one of my favorite memories about my mom is snow days. So when we were little kids and had snow days, my mom would always make it a lot of fun for us, doing maybe educational things, but really the favorite thing is when she would go outside, get like a bowl of snow, and then she would melt like sugar and pour it into it, and it would freeze and harden. It was really just sugar. I mean, come on, who doesn't like sugar as a little kid? Anyway, just one of my favorite memories, just what my mom did when we had snow days. It was so much fun.
Made sure that I was self-supporting and made sure that I could make it in the world.
My favorite thing about my mom, and it's continued to me being a mom, is she made every holiday magical. And I try to do the same for my daughter.
Always gave us the benefit of the doubt.
My favorite memory of my mom growing up was she would always make Sunday breakfast. And it's one of my most memorable times that I have in my childhood.
Mother's Day video posted by Senator Pete Ricketts of Nebraska with the senator and attendees at the Nebraska breakfast on Capitol Hill. President Biden putting out a Mother's Day proclamation that has this paragraph: "My mom used to always say the greatest virtue of all is courage, because without courage, you couldn't love with abandon. Every day, mothers summon the courage to love us with abandon. On Mother's Day, we honor all the mothers who continue to build, shape, and sustain our nation." Thanks for listening to Washington Today. Sign up for C-SPAN's evening newsletter, Word for Word, to get the stories Washington is talking about sent to you every day. Subscribe at c-span.org/connect. Have a good night and weekend.